Take a unique look at the National Football League with Pro Football View from the East, a program dedicated to bringing listeners in-depth coverage on all 32 teams. Join host Joe Tufaro, a lifelong Giants fan, and Dennis Agapito, a die-hard Jets fan, as they offer up hard-hitting opinions and analysis on the NFL from a New York perspective. So, let's start the show. From the East, here's Joe and Dennis.
All right, everybody, we're going to start the show. This is one of your hosts, Dennis Agapito, and thank you for joining us for another episode of Pro Football View from the East. And I'm very happy to be joined by a man who is a fan of a team who has a quarterback with the last name Manning, who's actually still playing. So here he is, my good friend Joe Tufaro. So Joe, how are you doing today?
Good, Dennis. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing all right. Unfortunately for both our squads, disappointing losses. The Jets, you know, they go in, Rex Ryan Bowl, all the big news. The Jets decide to give the game away, and then the Bills try to give it back to them, but they just can't. They just don't seem to want to walk through the door and take it back from Rex. I mean, it was such a typical Rex Ryan, kind of I understand why he's not here anymore kind of game. So the Jets lose, and we're going to talk a little bit about the AFC playoff picture after we go into what I thought was really there were a lot of great games this week. Don't get me wrong. A lot of great games. I mean, my goodness, is everything kind of muddled? I mean, I put that in the title there. It's muddled. I mean, don't – Joe, just quickly before we get into the Giant game, I took a look at some of the playoff contenders and looked at the schedule. And if you want to give yourself a migraine, okay, just look at the schedule and try to figure out who's coming. You have no idea trying to play the win-loss, win-loss game. Who's going to emerge here? Because look what happened the other night. Cincinnati loses to Houston. You see, you know, the Cardinals are playing well. They won that game. They've kind of separated themselves. The Giants had a chance to separate themselves. They didn't. The Kansas City Chiefs now knock off Denver. Peyton Manning's hurt. We're into this stuff a little bit, but, I mean, forget about trying to figure it out. Let's just take it week by week because, you know what, right now there's, especially in the AFC, more than the NFC, but there are a lot of teams hanging around, and it is really going to come down to separating the men from the boys. You know, there's an old adage, you win in December, you play in January, even though the year ends in January this year. But you know what? This holds true this year more than ever. I mean, from Thanksgiving on, you're going to separate the contenders from the pretenders, and there are a lot of contenders right now.
Yeah, and I guess the only thing that's holding true that you that we alluded to before the season started is that the Chargers just aren't very good. That's about the only one that's
you know
that's
what, they're
going to
play a part in this though because they're playing a lot of the Raiders and the Chiefs are going to be playing San Diego down the stretch, so they can play spoiler if they want to. Same thing with the Cowboys, they can play spoilers on these teams.
Yeah, the Chargers have only played one division game, so like you said, they're going to go up against, they got to play five more division games against the Chiefs, the Raiders, and the Broncos. So that's they're going to be, you know, you got five division games in the I petition the league. That means they have five division games in the last 6 weeks?
They have seven games left, so they have seven. Yeah. So they have five out of the seven are division games. No, listen, that talk about how about spreading it out a little bit, you know?
I mean, no joke. Yeah, they play Kansas City, Jacksonville, Denver, Kansas City, Miami, Oakland, Denver. Wow.
Wow, unbelievable! Yeah, like I said, they're going to play a big part in this playoff race, even though they're out of it. But let me ask you a question. I know, they were my sleeper team, and look, they've lost a lot of close games. Their line got banged up again. But could you? This is what I always say about teams at the end of the year. Was it a wasted year? Meaning that, look, if you didn't make the playoffs, is the arrow up? And would it surprise you if the San Diego Chargers came back next year and were contenders for the playoffs? Again, they have Phillip Rivers. They have some issues, obviously, but they've lost some close games. They still have issues with their offensive line. But would it shock you if they could come back and be a contender, or the Dallas Cowboys, or some of these up-and-coming teams? I even mentioned Jacksonville or the Oakland Raiders. They may fall short of the playoffs, all these teams. But is the arrow pointing up on your team where you can realistically, as a fan of that team, say, look, my team has a chance to make the playoffs next year? Or is the arrow pointing down, like for the Cleveland Browns last year, who – lost five straight, finished 7-9, and are now terrible.
Yeah, no, I think if you go through this and you look at these teams that are at the bottom, you know, the problem with some of them and the reason they stay at the bottom is their organization. You know, the 49ers are in disarray. They're 3-6. They're 0-3 in their division. They're not going anywhere, and I wouldn't say, oh, but look what they can do next year. You know, you're in New Orleans, 4-6. Whether or not Rob Ryan still has a job this morning or not, he's probably begging to stay for the rest of the season so he can get a job next year. You know, Peyton's probably gone. They said he's looking around like he might be leaving. But if you're in Detroit, okay, you know, we showed a little life. We've lost some games close. We need to fix a few areas. If you're the Cowboys, you point to all the injuries you've had, but you also realize the error of your way that you can't just stick any shoplifting, wife-beating running back behind that offensive line and turn out to be a hero. And, you know, the Chargers, like you said, they've lost close games. The Titans have to make some changes, but they have a quarterback. You know, the Browns are going to go with Manziel the rest of the year, so I wouldn't exactly say they're on the right path.
No, they're one of the teams that have to rebuild. There are some teams that you look at and you say, this team is going to be in rebuild mode. You know, they're going to be doing what Tampa Bay is doing. But again, my point is this, like Tampa Bay, I mean, I always discuss about the Jets, which is why you say why I wasn't so high in the Jets, because they built through free agency, Joe. And when you build through free agency, you build mediocrity. That's what you build. You can't build a great team, and you know this, because you've seen it with the Giants. I mean, that year they beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl when they were undefeated. I think their whole draft class contributed a lot to that Super Bowl run, the entire draft class.
Yeah, they did. They had seven guys that year, and they all played. Yep.
Yeah, you can't build a great – where do you get great players from? I mean, I know maybe in free agency there's a few that slip out because of salary caps and whatever, but for the most part, most free agents are a 5 out of a 10. Most of them, serviceable. Doesn't mean you can't use it, but that's why you – look, if you could build a team through free agency and be successful, every team would just clear out their salary cap, go into the next year's free agency and spend as much money as they can and just say, here we go, we're going to the playoffs. It just doesn't work that way. I mean, I hate the Patriots. They use a mixed bag.
Yeah. Now, Philadelphia proved it, you know, a couple of years back. They tried to buy everybody, and that didn't work. And I think you're right, Dennis. I think what those guys are, you know, they're complementary pieces. If you think you have your team built, but either the guy who you thought was going to play middle linebacker got hurt or just not up to snuff or you don't have enough depth, to go out and sign somebody is fine. You have to have one guy that can fit in there that's going to then make you turn the corner, give you a little bit of leadership, give you a little bit of experience, bring in a veteran guy. I think that works. You bring in a Dominic Rodgers Cromartie. You bring in a guy who's going to last for a few years. You bring in, like the Giants did, an actual role to solidify your back end and to give you some leadership. That's fine, but you can't bring in 6, 7, 8 guys and expect it to work because it just doesn't. I don't mind the one complimentary piece or the one guy that's going to give you what you've been missing. But I agree with you. You can't just go out and buy 6, 7 guys and expect them to all fit in together. And again, most players don't play to the same level of ability on a different team because they don't have the same people surrounding them. You know, look at all the guys that we talked about this last week, Dennis, all the guys who have left Seattle. They don't play to the same level they did in Seattle because they don't have the same pieces around them. So, you know, that's why I always laugh when Super Bowl teams get raided by the other GMs with their free agents. You know, the Giants had a guy, and this is a long time ago, so some of you will remember, but there's a guy named Jabril Wilson, who was a safety for the 2007 Giants. And he was fantastic. He was great. It was a complimentary piece. He fit in great with everybody. He played very well. He played good in the Super Bowl. And the Raiders give him $28 million the next year as a contract for 3 or 4 years. And you can't match that because, you know, he wasn't worth that to your team. And, of course, he goes out there and he's out of the league in 3 years. So, you know, that's just how it happens. Is, you know, there's still guys out there that think he can buy certain pieces. And you still have to pick the right one. You know, I don't mind getting the one or two guys, but you still have to pick the right ones. And they have to be able to fit into your team and fit into your scheme.
Yeah, you know what? Green Bay builds pretty much exclusively through the draft, and I don't really subscribe to that. But that they've been successful doing that. Yeah, people talk about having a great quarterback, and that helps. Don't get me wrong.
But if they do make trades,
the best quarterback, Aaron Rodgers would have won the last 5 Super Bowls, wouldn't he?
Yeah, but they also make trades. They don't sign many guys free agent, but they do make trades. They traded with the Giants a few times. You know, they'll pick up a few guys here and there. But they do trade here and there for running backs. And, you know, they traded with us for Ryan Grant and couple of things years back. So they'll still do that too. They'll still find somebody that they need. They'll still fill a position of need through the trade. But you're right. He very rarely goes out and spends big money. I guess since Reggie White, they haven't really spent big money on anybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, again, you talked about the organization. We're getting the Giant game in a minute. We're talking about organizations and things like this. Like, for example, the Baltimore Ravens. I mean, I'm sure nobody's – so some people are predicting them to go to the Super Bowl. And they look, having a terrible year. But, again, Ozzie Newsome is – we would say he's a terrific GM. You know, can they turn it around real quick? Well, they're a good organization. The Pittsburgh Steelers had a lot of problems with their secondary last year. They didn't go out and spend $100 million and go get every single cornerback under the sun. I mean, just the point is this, is that, like you said, I look at, as much as I hate them, I look at New England, and they always kind of trade back in the drafts. Not so much in recent times because of the salary cap. I think they feel they're in a good salary cap position. They've been using more of their first-round picks. But they always have, like, 10 draft picks. They're bringing in 10 new bodies. They do use free agency. They have in the past. I mean, back in 2007, people forget that Julius Thomas was a big pickup for them. He was the guy who had Eli Manning by the jersey, and if he held on, hey, it's a perfect season. But they made sure they brought in Randy Moss. They did. They use everything, okay? But for the most part, these guys, they build depth through the draft. They have depth, and I know we're going to get New England in a minute. As much as I can't stand them, that was a great game. We're going to talk about that game in a minute. But this is why they're able to weather the storm of losing linemen. I know they lost Edelman, which is a big loss for them. But, you know, no one's knocking them out of the playoffs just yet just because they lost Edelman. But, again, you have to look at the philosophy of the team.
Yeah, and it also must be their scouting to a degree because, you know, you get a guy like a Butler, you know, their cornerback who made the interception in the Super Bowl, and he played Beckham one-on-one and only got burnt once this past week. And, you know, it's obviously they know how to pick good guys, and they don't mind, like you said, going back to the third and fourth round. It's okay with them to do that because they know they can find some quality guys. And, again, they have a system where they put you in and they say, this is what you do. This is how we do it here. You know, that's why they can take a LeGarrette Blount who everybody shied away from and said, hey, if you're willing to do it the way we do it, you'll play all the time and you'll be good, but we don't want to hear, give me the ball. We don't want to hear, you know, complaining. We don't do that here. This is what we do. This is who you are. You're nobody special because look who's up at the top. You know, you're never going to be better than that guy. So that's how they do it, and it's very, 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 very successful for them, and you have to give them a lot of credit for what they've built there. You know, they do it the right way, and, you know, you can look at different ways of – look at the different people that are involved up there, but there must be a lot of very, very good scouts, and, of course, Belichick is good at what he does. He has been for a long, long time.
Yeah, you know what else is that I don't think people give enough credit to the defense of the New England Patriots. I don't think they give enough credit. Right now they're fourth in the league and only a one-tenth of a point behind the Denver Broncos for points allowed, 18.8. I mean, this is what I'm talking about. You need a complete – here's something, and, you know, Carl Banks brought this up when I was listening on the radio because I was driving home about – the Patriots and better teams in this league, like better teams, like even I'll even put Cincinnati in there, even though they lost a game, or like Carolina, some of the better teams, Minnesota, maybe even Green Bay. I know they've lost a few, and maybe not so much Denver anymore with losing Peyton. Maybe they're kind of sliding away from this. They make you endure. They constantly come after you. They're like a blitzkrieg. It doesn't matter if, you know, they're not going to win. I don't think any team in this league is that good. Any given Sunday, all that stuff. Look, some of these teams might be number one seeds with a 13-3 record. I mean, that might very well be the case. You know, Carolina, but that's still a great year. But what they have that, say, that these middle-of-the-road teams are missing, and there's a lot of mediocrity here, but what they have is they have a relentlessness to them. They're on top of you constantly. They're constantly putting pressure on you. We discussed baseball analogy, right? The Kansas City Royals, they put the ball in play. They put pressure on your defense. The guy made Lucas Duda make a throw home. He threw it to the backstop. So this is what you're getting from, say, these better teams in the league and why they're kind of separating themselves. You see, Jacksonville will play a great game against the Jets, which they did. They put up 450 yards of offense, but they gave four turnovers. The guy drops the punt. You know, they just right. they give the game away. They're not relentless. They're not on top of you forcing you to make mistakes. They make mistakes that allow you to capitalize. And this is right. what I'm looking at here. And what's getting this Giant game right now? Because first of all, the Giants, I have to say this about the Giants, and something I've always known about the Giants. If it's a big game, I don't care who's coaching the Giants, I don't care who's playing. If it's a big game with the Giants, they show up for it. And they sure did for this one. I don't want to hear that Edelman got hurt, this and that. There were a lot of things that went back and forth in this game. But they showed up, and it was a great game. I know you're upset that they lost because the Giants certainly could have given themselves some separation in the division, all these wonderful things. But what a terrific game. But you're looking at two teams, and I know you're the Giants on defense, talent-wise, you know, are not as great as they were in the past. But, again, both teams are relentless, and they endure, and they weather the storm, and they put pressure on the other guy. You know, you make a play. You do this. McBride picks off that pass. I mean, Tom Brady doesn't throw many interceptions. So, I mean, how do you feel about just the structure of that game, about two teams that go after each other and that pressure on the other side?
Yeah, you know, I didn't fall into the for obvious reasons. I didn't fall into a lot of the hype about the game itself. You know, CBS tried to do it as a revenge game. And I'm like, revenge for what? For losing a Super Bowl? That's, you know, or for losing a perfect season? That's long gone for both these guys, for both the coaches, for both the quarterbacks. They don't think about that kind of stuff. And it certainly is completely different teams. You know, there's nobody held over except for the quarterbacks and maybe one other guy. So I think that I didn't fall into that, but you always know that Tom Coughlin's got his guys up for these types of games. I think that's what we all like about Tom as fans, is they do show up. They are prepared. They play at a higher level for some reason, which is frustrating because sometimes they play at a lower level for teams that they should be beating. But they do, as you say, they always seem to get up for these games. And he's got something over Belichick that I guess he understands how he prepares. And so he's able to match him in a way on those weeks because he's beaten him enough times, as we've seen. I'm sure everybody saw all the stats. And he's beaten them in big games. And they've ended a lot of different of their streaks. You know, and again, it was almost annoying to listen to Nance describe all of this. You know, why do you give the ball to the Patriots to start the game? Why do you do this? Why they're the best at this? Because you have to be able to believe that you can beat them. You know, it's the first game that they haven't scored on their first possession in the second half. This is the first game where they didn't get 75% in third down conversions. You can't just throw them out there and say, hey, we're going to lose, because these guys are better than us, because they do us, because look at all their stats. You have to put that out as a challenge to your team, and I think that's what Tom does so well, is prepare his team for what the other team does well, and he's very straightforward about it. He doesn't see, and this is the big difference, and I don't always mean to bring Rex up into this, but I think this is the difference between those two types of coaches. Rex will always make an excuse, will always say, yeah, they're okay, you know, yeah, they got lucky, they didn't really – they don't do this, they don't do that. If you listen to Tom's Wednesday press conferences, you'd think the team they're playing was undefeated every week, no matter who they are, because he finds their strengths and he tries to prepare his team for going up, for being prepared for that, and then finding ways to make his team, you know, exploit their few weaknesses, but at least he's always prepared for the other team's strengths. So I thought it was a fantastically entertaining game, no matter who you're a fan of. I can always tell when you don't hear much from the winning team's fans that they were all very, very impressed with what with how the game was. And again, you wish you had gotten one break, because we didn't get any breaks. But so you wish you'd gotten one break where you could have put it over the top, only because Dallas and Philly both lost. And you would have had a nice little cushion there. You could have knocked even a little bit further, not giving them any hope at all. And that's where the disappointment comes in. But, you know, the call was right on Beckham, unfortunately. The clock was run perfectly. There was nothing there that you kind of look at and say, wow, we should have won that game. Landon Collins jumps in front of DRC. He doesn't know he's behind him. You know, again, Nance says, oh, if he just gets out of the way, DRC can catch the ball. Yeah, well, he's not thinking about looking behind him and see if somebody else has an easier interception. He thinks he can make the play, should have made the play. Unfortunately, hits his head on the way down and drops the interception. So, great game. Tip your hat to everybody and move on, and hopefully it – I think it's good for them for the rest of the season. I think they are. I think it gives them something to look at for the rest of the season.
Joe, let's get into this quick before I get into some of the time management stuff. You're a referee. I think we've discussed this, and other people know. But if you're first to the show, not familiar with the show, Joe is a referee. Does high school, semi-pro, some junior college, or things of that nature. So, you know, he's my rules expert, and I want to get into this a little bit because I'm a little confused. I understand this ruling, and there's something else I want to ask you. But take us through this play and explain what's supposed to happen, why you feel the correct call was made, what could have been the other call if it had been gone a little bit differently. And there's one question I have for you when you get into, which is a football move still relevant in this, maybe not for this particular play, but in general, is making a football move still relevant? Because I still hear that term used a lot. And I don't know if the rule has been changed to make it where you have control and you become a runner, where you metamorphosize from a receiver into a runner. So please go over that play, go over those kind of things and explain it, because I think there is a lot of confusion still out there.
Yeah, the biggest confusion is whether or not you are, you know, the problem most of the time is people will group different plays into this ruling, and they'll say, oh, remember Devontae Adams, or remember Calvin Johnson, or remember the, and again, different things take place. It matters if you are in the end zone when you first get possession, or if you've run the ball into the end zone. It matters if you if it's a sideline play versus a goal line play. So things do change, and you can't just group everything together into the same mold. And that's usually where fans go wrong, is they remember the play that hurt them somewhere along the line, and they point to that, and you say, yeah, but it's not the same thing, and here's why. So here's the rule with Beckham is he needed to have possession of the ball, which he did, and then get both feet down inbounds. And, you know, again, if he had tapped both feet and just kept running and held on to the ball, he would have been fine. The fact that Butler comes up behind him, and as Ed Hockley explained, which is why I like Ed, because he's decided to take a lot of this away by having the explanation on TV. He, in his estimation, in his belief, the ball was knocked loose before the second foot touched the ground. Now, I don't know if touching means tapping or firmly planted, or, you know, that's sort of where the gray area is. And I think that they interpret it as he needs his foot down on the ground, meaning toe to heel. And at first I thought he had, but I guess if you go back and look at it, you can tell when Butler's hand comes in and his second foot's not really down on the ground yet, the ball moves. And then from then on, you're done. So whereas I did have a problem with it before I saw the replay three or four times, I agree with it now. The other thing is, you know, they're right. They do the right thing by calling it a touchdown, so no one has to challenge the play. They're trying to get the coaches to be able to keep their challenges for things that are, you know, a little bit more in the middle of the field, a little bit more in the middle of the game. They shouldn't have to challenge scoring plays, and that's why they went to this rule where everything, every turnover over scoring play is challenged by the replay booth, or observed by the replay booth. And so they call it a touchdown if it's close. So you can't blame the side judge or the back judge for calling it. I think it was the right thing to do, call it, and then go back and take a look at the frame by frame to see if it was coming loose or not before he had both feet on the ground. So that's the difference, though, Dennis, between that and, let's say, the Devontae Adams play where he caught the ball outside the end zone, or the Golden Tate play is the better one with
Golden
Detroit. Where he catches the ball basically on the half-yard line and has 2 feet down, and then as soon as he breaks the play's over. It's a touchdown. As soon as the ball breaks the plane, that one's over, even though it gets knocked out as he's going into the end zone. Because he caught it in the field of play and brought it to the end zone, he's become a runner, which means all you have to do is break the plane. They say they're going to go back and, again, look at the rule and figure out a better way to word it, figure out a better way to officiate it, figure out a better way to describe it at the end of this year, but they've been doing it for 4 or 5 years. And it just gets more and more confusing because it does matter where you're on the field. It does matter if you're going to the ground or not. It does matter if you've become a runner. So there's a lot of different things that go into it. And again, unfortunately, the announcers, and I really wish they would all go to a officiating camp for a week, wouldn't kill anybody to spend a little money and go spend a week somewhere and learn some of these things and go over them so that they can speak intelligently about them instead of just saying, I have no idea how to figure this out and throwing up their hands and walking away. You know, they really should understand exactly how this is all being done. And again, I applaud Ed for always giving an explanation. So at least you know where it's coming from if you bother to listen to the explanation.
Now, is making a football move still applicable here, or is that something that was an older rule which doesn't – I hear that still mentioned.
Yeah. Now, football move is still for in the field of play. End zone is just 2 feet firmly on the ground with ball in possession, unless you're going to the ground. Then you have to keep it all the way through the catch, all the way to the ground. So, again, all he needed to do was get both feet firmly on the ground, which he didn't do. So that's the key to that one. The football move thing is in the field of play. You still have to be able to get both feet down and then become and turn yourself basically into a runner by being under control. It becomes a little bit too of an interpretive thing, which they'd like to get away from. And again, we run into it weekly. The only good thing about us is we don't have replay, so whatever we say goes. But you can imagine, you know, you get two or three officials on a field who don't work together on a regular basis, and the conversations get a little long-winded, and at some point you just got to go in and say, hey, guys, what do you have? What do you have? Okay, we're going with this, and that's it. You can't spend all day talking about it because you turn into this. You turn out to do a talk show on the field. But replay and television and, you know, that's what's caused all this, and it's not going to change, right? They're not going to stop doing they're not going to stop showing it. They're not going to stop showing replays, and the technology is only going to get better, right, Dennis? Right? It's not going to get any worse. So they're going to have more views. They're going to get better TV cameras. They're going to get better slow motion. They're going to get better high def, and you're just going to continue to do this. It's just how it is.
Yeah, you know, I saw a play in the Arizona Cardinals game with Darren Fells. He caught the ball two hands. He started to run, but as he brought the ball in to tuck it, it was fumbling around a little bit. And then they came, they hit him, and the ball came out, and they recovered. And I think they called it an incomplete pass on the field.
Pass, yeah.
They called it an incomplete pass. And then they went and looked at a replay, and it was borderline. But the fact that it was – I mean, they upheld the decision, but if he had – tucked it cleanly, if he had brought it down and tucked it real clean, because he took a couple steps with the ball, but as he was tucking the ball, it was wobbling around, and that's why it came loose. And this is what people got to understand. So that's not a fumble then. And just when you go to the ground, you got to control the ball. It's the same thing. If that's not a fumble, right, or not a catch, it wasn't a fumble or a catch, because when the ball came out, so that's an incomplete pass, okay?
Right.
It wasn't a fumble, an incomplete pass.
You have to have the catch first to have a fumble, right? So it was never a catch.
Yes.
So,
yeah. It was never a catch. It was an incomplete pass, okay? They were trying to determine whether it was an incomplete pass or a fumble. So it was an incomplete pass. This is the same thing with going to the ground. People say, well, he caught the ball and he tapped his feet in bounds. But when he goes to the ground, if he's going to get that advantage in the field of play, where if he's bobbling the ball as he's going to tuck it away and that's not a fumble, then it's the same thing if he taps his toes in the end zone. Now his toes are down. And some people think he's not a runner. A runner, if he sticks the ball across, that's a touchdown play over. If the ball gets whacked out of his hands, play over, too late.
Right.
But with a receiver, taps his toes, has his hands out of bounds, say, comes down, the ball hits the ground and then pops out. Even though he had control of the ball with his feet on the ground, when the ball pops out, that's an incomplete pass, correct? And because he's getting the same disadvantage that the advantage you're getting in the middle of the field, they have to carry over to what plays that are on the sideline or in the end zone.
Right, and the thing is, like, the key point there is, if you go to the ground, no matter where you are, you have to keep control of the ball.
Okay.
And that's the part that kind of, again, gets a little bit crazy, because like you said, he's caught it, he's got 2 feet down inbounds, he's in the end zone, and he falls down. That used to be, who cares? You know, in the old days, before Calvin Johnson.
Yep.
But, you know, then they changed the rule that said you have to keep it all the way through. So the fact that in your one in the middle of the field, the fact that he's basically has never had possession of the ball, it can't be a fumble. So it's got to be an incomplete pass. And by definition, you know, we have certain rules that we live by is if it's a fumble or an incomplete pass, it's an incomplete pass. And so if we see something quick and we see the guy kind of looks like he kind of gets in his hands, goes to make a turn, gets hit, and it pops out, it's incomplete. And that's kind of the end of the discussion. So that's what we live by as far as a philosophy. There are just certain things that make it a little bit easier for everybody to understand that that's just how we have to view it, because you have to have possession. Unless you know he's had possession, you can't call it a fumble. So if the ball's moving at all, then there's no possession, then it can't be a fumble. It's got to be incomplete. So, you know, it's tough because, then you see the replay and you go, oh, we had it. Well, yeah, but I didn't get to see the replay and I didn't get to see it in slow motion. You know, you have to see it live and you got to see it in fast motion and from some distance away. Again, we're a lot further away than the cameras show on the field, and it makes it more and more difficult each time. But the philosophy of it is pretty basic. And but again, you have to understand that not everything applies to every situation. I think that's where it gets really, really confusing, is when people try to put the Golden Tate play in with the Calvin Johnson play and with the Davante Adams play. They're completely different.
All right. Well, I really appreciate the explanation, Joe. And I want to go back to the Giant game real quick, and we're going to get into some of these playoff pictures. Now, I'm sure you didn't have a problem with them going for a touchdown. Here's my opinion on the end of the game there, where they went for the two things. You do one of two things, in my opinion. You either be very aggressive and you go for the touchdown and you don't care. So listen, we're going to go for the touchdown. We're going to try to – we don't care how much time we give Tom Brady. We don't care how many timeouts we have left. We're not going to try to milk the clock here and either score a touchdown or get a field goal. What we're going to try to do is we're going to try to score a touchdown, period. If he's left with time and time – and he can go down and score a touchdown and beat us, great. We're going to make it so he has to score a touchdown. That's what we're going to do. But just to play devil's advocate here for a minute, first and goal from the 5, New England's already burned 2 timeouts, okay? There's 2:06 left in the game. And that was where the Beckham play happened. So obviously that stops the clock, allows New England to save the timeout.
Right.
Next play was an incomplete pass again, but then the 2-minute warning hit. So that made sense to throw the ball there.
But it was 2:01 at that point. They had to run 2 more plays until they got the 2-minute warning.
Yeah, but it was 2:01
when
the clock stopped, though. Yeah, but it was 2:01 when the clock stopped.
They didn't even get to the 2-minute warning. They were going to get the other free. So he got to save a timeout, plus he saved the 2-minute warning for himself. See,
saying on first down, Joe, but on first down. See, it was 2:06 on first down, and that would have been the time to run, because if you ran there, you probably would have gone down to the 2-minute warning. Right. Let's say you didn't score. Let's say you ran on 1st and 5. You threw to Beckham, where he had that controversial play.
Well,
you
scored a touchdown. Yeah.
You scored a touchdown. Yeah. But again, here's the point. They're expecting you to run so you can catch them. And personally, for me, I think I would have played it differently. I don't have a problem with the philosophy. There's 2 philosophies here. Be aggressive, score a touchdown, and try to catch them off guard, or run and hope you get in the end zone. If you don't, let them burn their timeouts. You probably could have got it down to about 1:10. That first down play where they threw and it ended up being incomplete ultimately left the clock at 2:01 with the clock stopped. They threw another pass because they knew the 2-minute warning was coming anyway. So that one's kind of irrelevant about running clock, because throwing on second down, the 1 second ticks off wherever it stopped, you know, whatever time it was. 1:56, 1:57, whatever it was, that's a 2-minute warning. So throwing the ball there makes all the sense in the world. I'm just asking you, from your point, when you looked at this game, do you say, man, you know, looking back on it now, maybe we should have run the ball first and goal on the 5 with 2:06, and it would have probably gone to the 2-minute warning, and then maybe we could have kept running the ball, hope we scored, let them burn their timeout. If they don't, it would have been about 1:10 left on the clock. They wouldn't have had timeouts left. Even if we kicked the field goal, they got to go down and get a field goal. If we score a touchdown, great. You know, then whatever. There's a lot of scenarios there with the touchdown, how quickly you would have scored the touchdown. But I'm just saying the philosophy could have been, look, we're going to run the ball. We're going to run as much clock. If we kick the field goal, we're going to leave them with no timeouts and 1:10 on the clock. instead of a minute 50, which is what they ended up with no timeouts. Because once they stopped them on third down, they ended up with the last timeout. They kicked the field goal, and we know what happened from there. So just go through that scenario for me as far as what you're thinking after the fact. Play a little Monday morning quarterback.
Yeah, no, I have no issue with it because, as Eli said after the game and he said yesterday on the radio, he said they had a run called on first down. And he said, and if you remember, the Giants called a timeout after
the
Patriots called a timeout. He let it run down. He looked up. He said they had six defensive linemen in the game, plus the linebackers there. He said we weren't going to be able to run because we had a run call, but we weren't going to be able to run. They weren't going to let you run there. And you weren't going to take 6 or 7 seconds off the clock. So you were still going to be in the same boat. So he said, we went over, we talked about it, and said, what are we doing here? Are we just trying to milk the clock, or are we going to, or is this touchdown or bust, or, you know, tell me what the philosophy is here. And that's why he said he called the timeout to go over and get it all clear so that they didn't make any mistakes. And they said, no, you know, here's what we're going to do. If that's what, if they went to goal line on the 6 yard line, which is what they did, on the, or on the 4 yard line, wherever they were, they went to their goal line defense, which kind of surprised him. He said, we need to throw the ball. And again, not to be annoying, they did score a touchdown. So people are going, how do you throw the ball? And you go, well, they did score a touchdown. The guy did catch the ball in the end zone if he puts it away, or if it's not like it was tipped. It's not like they missed the throw. He threw it in his hands, and he caught it in his hands, and he got 1 3/4 of a foot down before the guy knocked it out. That's not a bad play call when you score a touchdown one-on-one with Odell Beckham Jr. So the fact that it stops the clock there, you're kind of not expecting that. You almost have to say, well, you would have given them the ball back with 2 minutes to go and a timeout, because that was still north of the two-minute warning also. So you would have given them the ball back with the two-minute warning left, having to score 7, but you would have given the ball back with 2 minutes to go after the kickoff.
Well, probably would have gone the kickoff show.
You know, he doesn't – well, but he doesn't run kickoffs back with 2 minutes to go. That's his philosophy for the last 15 years. That's why, if you notice, the kickoff was right to the goal line. The guy stayed in the end zone and reached and caught it and stayed there, because that's Belichick's philosophy. He doesn't want that 15 seconds of running around to get him 2 extra yards. He doesn't believe in that. He never has. So he always takes a knee right there if he can. Now you can try to pooch it, but that always gets you in trouble too. So the answer is you would have had Tom Brady with 2 minutes with one timeout, having to score a touchdown, or, you know, hopefully you can get a little bit more time off, which they did, and still needing a touchdown, you know, if they had scored on the second or third down. So he walked out there, made the play, and that was, and I think it was the absolute right thing to do. You don't want to be up 2 there because they have Steven Gostkowski. They even said that was probably the edge of his range as it was. You know, it was a 56-yard field goal, for God's sake. It's not like we gave him a 20-yard field goal to win the game. The guy had to kick it. It would have been nice to keep him at 58 or 59 if they could have made a few more tackles there. And, again, he throws the interception on first down on the pressure that Collins drops. They get him to 4th and 10. The guy has to break a tackle to make the first down. You know, they didn't do a lot of things wrong here. It was just execution by the Patriots. You know, how many guys on 4th and 10 catch the ball 8 yards down the field and have to try to make it, or catch it 4 yards down the field and they expect them to run for it? Patriots always go far enough down the field. They always have their passing in the right spot. You know, they got pressure on him as much as they could. They forced him into some bad throws. They forced him into some rushes. I don't think they did anything wrong. Again, the only thing that happens there is if Beckham catches the ball, you give him the ball back with 2 minutes and a timeout. And then what do you say? Oh, you should have taken a knee and tried to get him to go lower and tried to, you know, you can't play for a field goal there. And Belichick is brilliant to call. How many head coaches, Dennis, at 2:14 stand there and let it run down to the 2 minute warning and say, we'll take our timeouts on the other side?
You mean like Todd Bowles?
Yeah. He takes it at 2:14 and forces the Giants to run 6 plays in 16 seconds or 18 seconds, because that's how good he is. He figured this out, that if I can get the ball back with 2 minutes, whether I need 6 or 3, I'm good. I'm golden. because that's what I want. I either want more time and need seven, or I need less time and I need three. So he really didn't do anything wrong. Again, they scored the touchdown. I don't like, I guess the play that people don't like is the third down play where he rolls right, and because he takes part of the, you know, you take part of the field out of consideration because you're rolling to one side and you put Beckham on the top, which means he's out of the play because you're rolling away from him. I agree. And he said, Eli yesterday said, we had a bunch of crosses called, and you hope, again, we get a, he said, I run to that side so I get a couple of rubs. I get a couple of guys running into each other. Hopefully somebody pops out. So what the Patriots did, though, they played zone, which is they just passed guys off. They didn't fall for it. They didn't run into each other. They didn't take themselves out of the play. And he had nowhere to go with it. And thankfully, he remembered week one, and he slid down and took a knee and didn't throw it out of the back of the end zone.
He learned.
Got him to waste the last time out is basically all he did.
He learned from his mistake on that one. Yeah. You know, the funny thing is that, and then we're going to move on to the playoff race, is that you see Amendola, he goes past the sticks there and catches the ball. And the Jets had a couple of fourth down plays where they threw a little kind of bubble screen to their wide receivers, and they got tackled for losses on fourth down. So it goes to show you, look, I understand the philosophy, throw it and let the guy run for it. But you know what, maybe fourth and two, maybe have the guy run like a 3 yard out or, you know, an in cut or something, and let's get that first down. So goes to show you the Patriots there. On that fourth and 10, I was listening on the radio, and I said, they're going to get it. I just said, I knew it. I was like, I know. I think, boom. I'm like, it's Tom Brady. It just always seems to work out that way. But
the interception was the dagger, because you give Landon Collins all the credit in the world for going up and getting the ball. It turns out he didn't even need to jump. They could have just waited for it to come down, because he threw it like a wounded duck, and there was no Patriots around anywhere. He doesn't know that. You don't have time to survey the field as the ball's coming to you. You go up, make the play. You think there's a defender right there. I mean, you think there's an offensive player right there, obviously, because you're covering him. You don't know. He just continued to run. And he goes up. He gets it. He catches it. He secures it. And he hits his head on the ground and probably knocked him out for a second. And he dropped the ball. So, you know, you did everything right. You did everything right, except you didn't get lucky and you didn't win the game. So we'll take it from there, and we'll use it as a springboard and try to go 500 in the last six games and win a division.
Yeah, let's take a look at the NFC real quick, because it's a little bit clearer of a picture than the AFC in a minute. But, I mean, you know, again, the Giants are on a bye week. You got the Redskins in Philadelphia at 4-5. You got Dallas, they list seven in a row. I mean, they're reeling. I mean, pretty much you can almost put a fork in them. Again, we'll see what happens when Romo comes back. They play Miami. I mean, Minnesota, and I mean, here's a shocker. I mean, if I told you Minnesota would be leading the NFC North after nine games, I think you would look to me like I had six heads. But, you know, Green Bay has not looked good the last few weeks. Thought it was just them being on the road. You know, funny, they go to Denver, they play that game. Peyton Manning looks like Peyton Manning. And everyone's like, ooh, you know, look at this. And how things have changed in a couple of weeks. We'll get in the AFC playoff picture in a minute, how Peyton Manning and how Denver now has kind of changed the landscape. But who knows what's going to happen with Peyton. But, you know, Green Bay and Minnesota play each other this week. Let's just get into that quickly, because we're probably not going to have too much time to touch on games for this week. So the Packers are at the Vikings. Now, we thought maybe, you know, the Packers coming home, big favorites over Detroit. Detroit's reeling, little home cooking for Green Bay, and they go out and they lose that game. So now this game is humongous for both teams. I mean, but my personal opinion, Joe, is that two teams are coming out of this division. I still think Green Bay ultimately win it. I don't know if the Vikings are quite there yet. Would be surprised. I just think Green Bay's in a little bit of a slump. They're a better team than what they've shown. I think two are coming out of the North. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, so I think Green Bay writes the – I don't want to say writes the ship against Minnesota. But I think that they – I think that they could – I think this is the statement game. I think Green Bay kind of has to win this game if they want to win the division. Because I think it gives Minnesota too much confidence if they don't. Because then Green Bay, after Minnesota, they play Chicago, who's no pushover anymore. They got to play Dallas. They have to play Arizona. They have to play Minnesota again. So, you know, I think that I think the Packers need this a lot more than Minnesota does. And if the Packers do win this, I agree with you. I think we get two teams out of the North as the Falcons continue to fall a little bit. And again, we said no one's coming out of the East, so we're not really worried about that. And, you know, Seattle doesn't, as I said, doesn't look as good as they should and can't win at home anymore, and that hurts them a lot. So I think I would go along with that. I would say we get the Vikings and the Packers in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think the Cardinals have now separated themselves. They're certainly the favorites to win that division. I think the question mark here is, does Atlanta keep free-falling? Can they right the ship enough to get that second wild card short with three-game lead? The Panthers sure look like, again, we all know things can change and crazy things happen, but right now we're just looking at it as objectively as we can. And could somebody make a run at the Falcons? Sure, somebody could. We'll see what happens with them. They play a big game against Indianapolis this week. Big game for both teams, because now Indianapolis is now tied. So, you know, again, a little bit clearer of a picture in the NFC. Still have a long ways to go, but we'll see what happens after this week's game. Certainly that Packers-Vikings game, you know, that's the one you got to circle in the NFC right now and say, wow, this is a big one. We'll cause some separation. We'll cause, I like to call it the accordion effect. But let's get into the AFC, because we sure saw that with the accordion being smushed together. Joe, I've kind of laid this out. I'm putting the Steelers in the playoffs as a wild card right now. I'm putting them in because Ben Roethlisberger, who has a bad foot, only comes in, right, and is 22 of 33 for 379 yards and three touchdowns. Okay? They're 6-4 right now. They're getting a week off. Roethlisberger will get back to being healthy. I think they're making it, okay? Now, again, nothing's etched in stone. I'm going to just make an assumption and stick them in the playoffs. They're getting in as a wild card, okay? Now, I have seven other teams. Let me name them. The Bills, 5-4. Jets, 5-4. Dolphins, 4-5. Colts, 4-5. Texans, 4-5. Kansas City, 4-5. And Oakland Raiders, 4-5. Seven teams for two spots, because one of them is going to win the South. And one of them, one of these teams is going to make the other wild card if we assume Pittsburgh makes it. And you know what? I mean, I started looking at tie-breaking procedures, and I said, just don't even bother, because there's so much time left. Don't even bother. That's just a little bit. Is that? I mean, first of all, the Texans win that game last night. They're supposed to lose. They're playing the Jets, so it's a big game. That's a big game for the Jets. But here's the thing with the Jets is that the two big games they played as far as playoff positioning were against the Bills and the Raiders, and they lost both of them. And lucky the Raiders are one game behind them. But you know, here's a big game for Houston, not only to try to stay in the division, which they have a possibility of winning, but also if they do happen to lose the division, to stay in the wild card race. This is a big game here. And the other thing I want to bring up real quick is the Broncos, who obviously lost to the Kansas City Chiefs. Chiefs were out of it. They were a two-win team a few weeks ago. And I said, somebody's going to creep up in here. And
not
now,
anymore.
Not anymore. Now they're in the conversation. You know, Joe, the Chiefs, I think, could somebody in the West is going to make a run, whether it's Oakland or the Chiefs, because Denver is not as much of a threat anymore, are they? So, you know, let's take a look at that. The South, can somebody emerge from the South to be in that wild card race, and the West? And again, right now, even the Dolphins are in it. I mean, it's so muddled. You would have a better chance of getting your NCAA bracket right than figuring out who's going to the playoffs.
Yeah, especially in some of these divisions. Like you said, the Broncos without Peyton, you know, they did
That's
play
a game
without
changer.
Him. But they did play without him for the first couple of weeks also, and their defense won. And now all of a sudden their defense, you know, has kind of fallen off a little bit. So that's going to be – but now it's really on their shoulders. I don't think you can count on Brock Osweiler doing much than just keeping this team going. I think it's the Chiefs. I think the Chiefs look better than – I think the Chiefs look like the Chiefs we thought we were going to see in the beginning of the season. I think they've kind of separated themselves from the Raiders. The Raiders seem to still struggle in big games. You know, they're a nice story, but I don't think they're over the hump yet. I don't think they're at that point. I don't think they have all of the weapons they need. You know, and then they have – but they have two big games. They could go – if they go play – they're at Detroit and at Tennessee the next 2 weeks. So if they could come away with two wins there, then they get to go see KC, and then it's all on them at that point to make that statement. And then they close. God, what? This is a good schedule. And they close with Kansas City. So that'll be exciting. And but I would pick the Chiefs right now the way they're playing. And Andy Reid said that was the biggest game of his tenure right there, and they won it, and they look good doing it. You know, now you got to look at the Broncos and say, so all those three or four wins in the beginning of the season where nobody thought you should have won the game, does that come back and haunt you now at the end of the season?
Yeah, you know, I agree with you with, like, the Kansas City Chiefs. Here's their schedule. And again, I talked to you about this a little bit, about – looking at the schedules give you a migraine because you're like, oh, because so many things. Again, who thought Houston? People would say, oh, Houston's going to lose this game. They're going to be 3-6.
Right.
You know, the Jet fans were saying that. I said, well, whoa, hold your horses. I actually felt that Houston could win that game last night. I'm like, Cincinnati's not going undefeated. Again, even the best teams in this league are going to lose 3, maybe 4. 14-2, I'd be surprised if some team. I think the best record in this league is going to be 13-3. But anyway, I'm like, I'm not sure. Wouldn't be surprised. Houston come off a bye week. They're not that bad. They got a couple of nice defensive players. Anyway, I'm looking at Kansas City's schedule here. I'm just saying to myself, at San Diego, home against Buffalo. Now, here's a game, again, with two teams that are right in the race. So who knows where they're going to be, but one of them is going to get kind of knocked back and move forward. At Oakland, home against San Diego, at Baltimore, home against Cleveland. Oakland comes, again, two home games, Cleveland and Oakland. So, I mean, again, if somebody goes on a run, if Kansas City goes on a little bit of a run, they finish 5-2, I think they're going to get in. I think they're going to get in. Looking at that schedule, again, I don't know. I have no – don't even ask me again. Don't even ask me exactly. But just looking at these schedules and saying, you know what, can the Jets go 5-2 down the stretch? I don't know. I don't know. I'm looking at them saying, well, what's their best-case scenario for the Jets? I know the Jets. I'm saying 5-2 would be – everything would have to go really, really well for them. 2-5, everything would have to kind of fall apart. So is it – it's probably somewhere in the middle. 4-3 or 3-4. And 4-3 might get you in. It might not. 3-4, I don't think this gets you in. So
well,
you know
three,
what?
And you got three key games left, Dennis. Let's – you know, again, you can say win or losses against certain teams, but you know the three key games that the Jets have left are against the Giants, against Dallas, and against because you figure, you know, at Dallas on a Saturday, Saturday night, by the way, that game with Tony Romo back and Dallas maybe fighting for its life, that's going to be a tough game in Dallas. You got to play New England again, which, you know, who knows what that's going to feel like. Are they going to still be undefeated at that point? Are they going to play? Are they not going to play that whole thing? That's that week 16 nightmare where some teams are in already, and obviously they're going to be in the playoffs. And then you have to go back to Buffalo to end the season, and wouldn't Rex love to knock you out of the playoffs? So you've got a couple of games in there that are keys. And like I said, I don't think you have to go through them and say, oh, this is a win, this is a loss, this is a win, this is a loss. Because like you said, you don't ever know which Tennessee team is going to show up or which Dolphins team is going to show up or which Houston team is going to show up. But you do know playing the Giants, you know, in the stadium, and it's going to be a blue stadium, and that whole thing, and then which Dallas team do you get and which Buffalo team do you get?
You know, again, like, is it – which team here – I kept saying this. I even said this on – I do another podcast, you know, on just the Jets, and I said, you know, some two-win team – this was a few weeks ago. I said, some two-win team, and I mentioned, like, Houston and Kansas City, is going to make a run at the Jets because the Jets, you know, had a little comfortable lead there. And people were already putting them in the playoffs. Said, just hold your horses here because – you know, the Jets are playing in a tougher portion of their schedule. Some of these teams can – and it's the accordion effect. It's shrunk. And right now there's so many teams – again, seven teams for two spots. So there's two chairs. The music's playing. And you know what? As a, you know, and going around in a circle, there's seven people going around a circle for two chairs. And in my opinion, again, the Steelers – I mean, you know, maybe Roethlisberger gets hurt again. We don't know. We can never predict that kind of stuff. But right now I'm looking at them and just saying – they're too good. They're going to get in. They're probably going to get to 10 wins. That's the way I feel. And I just don't know. Again, 9 wins for the Jets or any team. Do they win a tiebreaker? They're 4-3 in the conference. They're 1-2 in their division, the Jets, right now. Again, a game against Houston. And you're right. There are some key games. But you know what? They can't take this Houston team lightly. They're going on the road. They're playing them. Houston has everything to play for in the world. I know they're only one game behind the Jets. What makes me think that the Jets – I explained this to you before, and I'll just lay this out quickly for everybody. I looked at the Jets' wins and losses and make it quick. The Jets have beaten three teams with a 4-5 record and have lost to two teams with a 4-5 record and one team with a 5-4 record. Forget the Patriots. They lost them too. So my point is, with teams around 500, the Jets are around 500. So they say they have an easy schedule. Well, I mean, Dallas is a little misleading because they've been so banged up. Right. And, you know, look, Tennessee, yeah. Can they beat? Sure. But would I be shocked? Would I be floored if Tennessee came in there and beat the Jets? No. So I would be shocked if anybody lost or anybody won. I have no idea what's going to come out of this. All I know is that I'm concerned.
Yeah, and desperation plays a part in it. Like you said, you know,
yes.
Dallas needs to win every game. So,
yeah.
You know, you have to go down there, and that's not a, like you said, you can't look at their record and say, oh, well, you know, they've only got two wins. They're going to be a completely different team when they come down there, and they're going to have to, and who knows? If at that point they've won three or four in a row, you know, does that change their mindset, and are they feeling it, and you're going down there? And, you know, that's, and again, it's the only game on TV that day. It's that Saturday game. Which will make it a little bit more exciting. You can't look at any of these teams anymore by their records and just say, oh, this is an easy game, this is an easy game. I don't think there are anymore.
No, and the Dolphins, you see, the Dolphins, by beating Philadelphia, and thank you very much, Mark Sanchez, for helping out the Jets. I had flashbacks of Mark Sanchez throwing that game away. You know, the Dolphins have put themselves back in the conversation. Even if they lose, mm-hmm. they go to the Jets the next week, they'll be 4-6. They probably still say, hey, we're not completely out of this. Again, look at Denver. Denver, how they've fallen out of it. And again, Houston's going to play tough, but you're 100% right. We're going to focus on this one game right now quickly before we wrap up the show. Another great episode. You know, it's really getting the crunch time. It's very exciting. But you're right, Joe. That Jets at that Giants game, because that's only 3 weeks away. I mean, there's two mm-hmm. games in between there. So almost no matter what, it's going to be very relevant to both teams, mm-hmm. no matter what happens to them. Okay. Because, well, the Giants are off this week, and then they play a game, and then they play. So the Giants only have one game before they play the Jets. The
right.
Jets have two. Okay. So, obviously, even more in the Giants' case, no matter what happens to that game, it's going to be very relevant for them and for the Jets
sure.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think the loser of that game is probably not going to the playoffs. And I would have to say this, even though I'm a Jets fan, I have to give the advantage to the Giants, even though I know they're the deep, because I just look at the Giants, they're up for big games. I have to give the advantage because the Jets secondary has been banged up. I look at the Giants, I look at Eli Manning. I mean, a good Patriots team there, a good Patriots defense. And, you know, I find it hard to believe that Odell Beckham isn't going to have a day even against Revis. And if he doesn't, then you're going to see Reuben Randall and all these other guys, you know the team better than me, but you're going to have to put so much effort into stopping Odell Beckham that it's just going to open things up. But look, it is what it is. It's a big game for both teams right at that point in time. And I honestly think I think more for the Jets than the Giants. If they lose it, I think they're out. But you had texted me earlier in the week about the winner of this game goes to 9-7. The winner of that particular game gets to 9-7. And you might be 100% right on the money there. That is a big game for both of our respective teams. They're playing each other, and they're both in the race in different ways. You know, you're in the race for your division there, and we'll be in a race for the wild card. It's going to really be exciting. And, you know, I wish it was a Jet home game. But even though they play in the same stadium, it's going to be filled with Blue fans, and it's going to be very exciting to see. And you're right, that one's going to tip the scales one way or the other, and I have a feeling that the loser is on the outside looking in. That's the way I feel about it.
Yeah, and that's why I said, you know, when I texted you, I said the only way for these two teams to get to 9 wins is going to be to beat the other one. I don't think any scenario you come up with where you can get to 9 without beating us, and I don't think we can figure out a way to get to 9 without beating you. So I think that's kind of the key to the season, and it'll be exciting, like you said. It always is. It's always a decent game. You know, luckily for you guys, Victor Cruz isn't going to be playing. Which would really put a ton of pressure on you, on the Jets, because having Cromartie and having, you know, the other guys back there have to cover him also. Although Dwayne Harris has done a fantastic job for the Giants this year.
Yeah.
It was a great pickup,
yes.
and he's going to be a tough matchup. And again, even against the best, Odell's going to get his chances. As much respect as people have for Darrelle Revis, and as good as he is, it's still Eli and it's still Odell. And somewhere along the line, you know, you think they're going to connect for a few things. Or again, like you said, you want to keep leaving guys over there, go right ahead. We'll find somebody else, because we've proven that there are other guys on this team that can play. So between Reuben Randall, Harris, this kid White out of Connecticut, made some big catches. You know, Ty is coming along as a tight end.
Green.
You know, you got a lot of weapons on this offense, so you're not going to just stick to looking at one matchup. I think it's a very, 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 very entertaining game, and again, we won't, what we don't have is the build up to it with the with Rex and all that stuff. But I'm sure it'll still be exciting enough around the city.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess the point is here is that, you know, a couple of weeks ago you might have looked at all the teams that were playing Denver and said, oh boy, you know, that's probably a loss there. That's probably, and that, and right now you're like, well, you know what? Hey, you know what? Denver, they might be struggling to hang on for their division. You know, they might be. Again, Brock Osweiler, he's not a proven commodity. So really, the fact that Denver has now kind of is a little up in the air exactly what they are. I know they still have a good defense and they can still probably win games. It's still a factor. I'm not saying they're just going to lose every game, but it's really come back down to earth as far as, all right, well, this game, again, Kansas City going to Denver. Look, they lose this game, they're probably out of it. Well, they won it. They sort of put themselves back in it. And there's all teams playing each other, and is some team going to fall by the wayside, giving the other team the opportunity to jump up to that 10-win level? And it's going to be very exciting down the stretch here. And again, the old adage is win in December, play in January, and it's going to hold true here. And I'm going to kind of wrap up with this, Joe, which was, you know, I do some stuff on the Jets, and you win and the Jets get off for the 4-1 start. I just kind of caution people to say, look, it's great they're 4-1. You don't take any victories off the board. A win is a win in this league. It's hard to get wins. But you know what? No, September and October only put you in position, if you are a contender for the playoffs, to make a push down the stretch of the season. That's all it does. Because how many teams have we seen sort of 6-0, 5-1, what, fall apart, right? You have to win in November and December to go to the playoffs. And this is holding true more than ever this year. And that's my feeling. You know, the teams that excel down this from Thanksgiving on are going to the playoffs. And the teams that are just mediocre or middle of the road, you know what, they're going home.
Yeah, and it's funny. This used to be the knock on Tom Coughlin is the team would start off 6-2 and then go 2-6. And you know, you'd be fighting for that ninth or tenth win to get to the playoffs. And, you know, the last couple of years, he's kind of done it the other way. We started off poorly, and now they have to win. And, again, you look at two games this season for the Giants that you wish you had back, which is – or you wish you had wins in, which is the Cowboy game, first game of the season, and this week. And you know, if you had two more wins, look at what that division looks like. You know, the Cowboys are definitely out of the mix. You know, if you go to that point, if you have three losses instead of five, and everybody else has five or more, you're in a really good spot with only six games to play for them. And so that's the lament of this season is what could have been, but you're not that good. So, but I think what they found, and just to throw this in there, Dennis, I know you want to get going. Mm-hmm. I know the one thing about this team is because of some of the guys that they were waiting for that are not going to come back now. I think it's almost a better plan instead of saying, oh, well, when Will Beatty comes back, we'll put him at right tackle and we'll figure it out from there. When Victor Cruz comes back, we stick him in the slot. They signed Hakeem Nicks this morning, by the way, to bring in another wide receiver that knows the system. You know, Cruz isn't going to come back. The middle linebacker is not coming back. So you now have Jasper Brinkley. You now have Kennard healthy. You now have Casillas healthy. That's your linebacking crew, and they're good. Because now they know they're playing every week. There's no more of this, oh, is he, you know, is he going to play? Is he going to practice? He practiced one day this week. He may play. It's a game time decision. The team's going to settle down in the next week or two. And like I said, they signed Hakeem Nicks this morning because they had the roster spot open from Victor leaving. I think it actually settles them down more, and now they play with who they have. And this is sort of like, here you go. This is who you got. You're no longer waiting for anybody to come back, and hopefully that settles it down a little bit, and they play up to their capabilities. I still think they have a good shot of winning this division and making some noise.
Yeah, you know what? Look, by that game, you went up against one of the better teams in the league. You played a tough competitive match. Could have gone either way. It was real good to see. But, Joe, I just want to thank you for another wonderful episode. I want to let everyone know, give us a follow if you're on Twitter. I'm at PFVFE. Joe is at Tufton, T-U-F-D-A-N. So, Joe, thank you very much for another wonderful episode. It's been great. We're looking forward to Week 11 action. Should be very exciting.
Thanks, Dennis. Talk to you soon.
All right, everybody. So for Joe Tufaro, this is Dennis Agapito. Please join us next week for another fantastic episode of Pro Football View from the East.